In this episode of QFM, I got a chance to speak to Isala Piriyasi, and we explored a real-world migration to Cilium CNI and how a seemingly minor subnet allocation issue led to silent packet loss in production. We'll break down the debugging process, firewall analysis, packet tracing, and routing table deep dives that uncovered an overlooked CIDR overlap. Plus, we discuss eBPF-powered observability with Thanos, security with Tetragon, and lessons learned from real-world DevOps challenges. If you're scaling Kubernetes, optimizing networking, or troubleshooting complex failures, you'll definitely want to check out this episode. Today's episode is sponsored by LearnKAIDS. LearnKAIDS has been providing Kubernetes trainings to organizations all over the world since 2017. Courses are instructor-led and are 60% practical and 40% theoretical. Students have access to the course materials for the rest of their lives, and the courses can be given to groups or individuals. Courses are given online or in person. To find out more how you can level up, visit learnkaids.io. Now, let's get into the episode. Hello, and welcome to KubeFM. What three emerging Kubernetes tools are you keeping an eye on?
These days, I'm mostly into observability, so my topmost would be Thanos. So like we use Thanos a lot for having high availability for our Prometheus instances, as well as it gives a lot of niche backupping and restoring functionality. And another tool I'm very interested in is called Tetragon from Cilia. So it's a security tool where you can analyze the security aspect of current system calls and all. So it's also written in eBPF. And this is not really a Kubernetes or Cloud AD tool, but there's this Prada DB DB database called something like that. And that is emerging ELK replacement. So it's built on top of Postgres. So I am keeping eye on that because their vision is really good.
Very good. Now, just as a quick introduction, what do you do and who do you work for?
My official title is Senior Software Engineer at WSO2, but I mostly these days work on DevOps side, mostly doing R&D. And these days, I spend most of my time basically maintaining the network stack of our product called Courier, which is like an internal developer, opinionated internal developer platform, you could say. And like you can, we help organizations not get into that. We have a million microservices and we don't know what each does situation.
And how did you get into cloud native?
It's more like I graduated into cloud native. So basically my journey, like all computer science started around in early 11, 12, early teens basically. So I was into this game called Call of Duty, which is like a shooter game, you might have heard. So we and a bunch of my friends were playing for like hours and hours on that. And one day, like few friends asked, like, can we host our own server? Because we were playing on other servers. And so I just, because I was kind of a nerdy kid even then, I just looked into how they host these servers and what we can do to host ourselves. So that's where I got into Linux sort of ways. And after maybe a few weeks of playing around, I got a server running on a DigitalOcean VM. And from there, I slowly get in touch with DevOps and I developed the passion for it. And so while working on that, I started coding on creating mods for that game. And so that's how I started. But eventually that server actually went to be the one of the top servers in the world. It went till the top 5th ranked in the world.
Very good. Are you still doing anything with gaming?
Nowadays I don't have much time, but when I get a time, I play League of Legends. And when I get to with my friends, mostly play League of Legends.
Very good. Now, how do you keep updated with Kubernetes and the cloud native ecosystem? Things move very quickly. What works best for you? Books, blogs, podcasts? What's your favorite sort of resources?
Yeah. So I think most of my updates nowadays I get through Twitter 4X, what you call it. So like I'm very invested in tech community in Twitter. Yeah, I see all of the new upcoming AI and DevOps related content. And yeah, besides Twitter, like I am a huge lurk on Reddit. So I usually browse through Kubernetes subreddit, /r/DevOps. And another particular thing I really like is /r/Formlabs, where like the people share their DIY setups. Because like I'm also very much into DIY things. So I look around them and learn things.
Okay, good. If you could go back in time and share one career tip with your younger self, what would it be?
Okay, that I would say, first of all, like, I would, on a serious tone, I would say start blogging. So, since I started blogging, like, maybe 2 years ago, I learned a lot of things where, like, before I knew the concepts, but when you sit down and start writing some article about it, you actually find like there are gaps in your knowledge where you can improve on. So that's one of the main thing I would say for like someone even starting. Like you don't need to be an expert at it. Just start writing something. You don't even need to publish it. Like when you write it, you'll try to understand like where you can improve on.
Great. As part of our monthly content discovery, we found these articles. Well, we found this article that you wrote called Learn It the Hard Way. Don't use Cilium's default pod CIDR. So The following questions are designed to explore those topics further. Let's start with your background. You mentioned being involved with eBPF for a while. How did this lead to your role in migrating your clusters from Azure CNI to Cilium CNI?
Yeah, so like I got into eBPF at my final years of studies at my undergraduate degree. So like I was doing this final year project that is inspired by my internship experience, where it will find anomalies within a Kubernetes cluster and like alert the SRE team, like saying before, like it turns into a bigger problem. So it will just passively monitor the cluster and just send updates. So while I was researching about this, I needed a like vendor neutral, like language neutral solution for this. So I came across eBPF and like I found it was really good fit for my project. So I developed my project on top of that. And while doing the evaluation phase of this project, I reached out to a few people on LinkedIn. And it turns out like one of the people I reached out to was like a solution architect at WSO2, the company I worked on, right? And I showcased my demo and like what I did with this, and they were really impressed about that, about my understanding. And so he connected me with someone within the company who is now my lead, called Akmal. So he was actually by that time was trying to build eBPF into the WSO. So because of that, I was recruited. And initially, I was given a task of like using another eBPF-based solution called Pixie to build an observability solution for a courier platform. But it didn't plan out the way we wanted to be. It was not quite production ready by then. So what we did was we came across Cilium, and Cilium has a lot of built-in observability capabilities and a lot more security things. So at the end, even though like it's a risky migration, we thought of the pros outweigh the cons, and so that's how I got into the role, basically.
Migrating to a new CNI is a significant decision. What were the primary factors that led your team to choose Cilium for this migration?
Yeah, so like as mentioned, so we were initially using a solution called Pixie to provide observability, but we found it has a lot of good capabilities, but at that time, I think it's way more stable now. At this is like early 2022. And those days, it wasn't very stable. So, but we wanted to provide a framework agnostic observability solution for like HTTP metrics and all. So since we are working on a Kubernetes level, we found Cilium to be excellent pick, and as well as like Cilium comes with like a lot of more goodies like transparent encryption with WireGuard and built-in load balancers and levels layer server and network policies and a lot of things. So we pitched this to our product council, and after paying pros and cons, and they were willing to give this a try, and that it has paid significantly by now. So yeah, so that's how it all kicked up.
It seems like Cilium offered numerous benefits. However, you mentioned an incident that occurred post-migration. Can you walk us through what happened when your team promoted updates to the staging environment?
Yeah, so by this issue when it came around, like we were running Cilium in production for more than 8 months, and we had virtually no issues, like from like very minor things. It was running very smoothly. And then like we are doing like releases every day. Like we are doing 5 releases per week, and this was on a Monday. So like SRE team just promoted like this dev environment to staging, and after a while like we started receiving like site transfers and saying staging is not working. And so it's kind of expected sometimes, because like we are pushing like 2-3 days worth of changes to staging, sometimes it breaks. So SRE team was like doing the natural diagnostic steps, and they pinned out this problem to our load balancer tagged by Nginx was not responding at all. And so they were saying like maybe some Nginx configuration issues, some sort of thing. But the main concern they had was like we have 2 clusters, like we serve both EU and US, and the EU one was like working perfectly, and US one was the one that's not responding. And these two have virtually the same configuration. And yeah, so that's where like SRE team was kind of stuck on like what's going on. And yeah.
Complex networking issues often require extensive troubleshooting. What steps did your team take to investigate and understand the problem?
Yeah, so like they did a lot of investigative things before like reaching out to me. So they have checked the like, so main concern they had was maybe these traffic are getting dropped by the firewall. So like between the firewall, load balancer and the user, the main thing is the firewall, right? So they were checking, like they enabled a lot of logs on firewall side, and they recreated some of the load balancers and even the firewall. And they even went into node level packet tracing and got some packet captures as well. So all of these data pointed to a like very strange pattern where like we can see the packets coming in through the load balancer to the firewall to the load balancer to the Nginx pod. You can see SYN packets coming in, but none of the ACK packets aren't getting out of the Nginx pods. And strange enough, like this issue was only observed when the traffic is coming through the firewall. So they were able to like put small VMs within different subnets and try to bypass the firewall and see, and those were working. So the only issue was like when the packet is coming through the firewall, it was not responding.
Got it. As you dug deeper into the issue, you uncovered an interesting root cause. For our more technically inclined listeners, could you explain what you discovered about the subnet assignments?
Yeah, so like since this was a firewall, like when you look at the from the big perspective, like it is like a firewall. So since we are not managing the firewall ourselves, like we were using Azure firewall, so we brought out an Azure expert on to debug this issue, because like we don't have a lot of internal access to these firewalls. So while they were checking on these things, like they were checking like different packet flows and how the packets are coming and going, we noticed like this particular issue where like when we call from the within the subnet the firewall is on, like even if you put a VM on this and call the got the answer? It doesn't work, but anywhere else, like literally anywhere else, it works. So we were suspicious of like why this is happening. He was like, it's not just the firewall. If even if you bypass the firewall and come directly to the pod within the firewall subnet, it still doesn't work. So to investigate further, like we SSH into the node and try to figure out what's going on. And when we list the routing table, we actually found the issue. So the root cause of this issue was like CDM by default configure the like cluster CIDR. So basically like where how the each pod get an IP. So to 10.0.0.0/8. So that's a like huge IP subnet. And from this, they CDM like take a small subnet to each, assign each small subnet to each node. And so each node get its own subnet. But in this case, like it's a huge subnet and it has a lot of IP addresses that are quite redundant. So what we noticed was like, since this is an internal IP address, like the network mask was like internal, like 10x, 10xx1. So it was when we check in the routing table, we see 10.1.0.0 something goes to node A, B, then 2 goes to node B, like that. And at the end, we saw another entry that is directly overlapping with the subnet of the firewall. So it's literally the subnet mask of the firewall. So we found was like when the packet is coming, it goes to the routing table and hits the pod. And when the response packet is routed to the node to route outside of the cluster to go to the firewall, the response packet, that routing rule take place, routing rule get applied, and that packet get routed to a different node rather than outside of the cluster because it's what's overlapping with the firewall. So in this case, like there was no one to act this packet because there was no destination within that particular node for this particular IP, the exact firewall IP. We weren't seeing any echo, anything. So it was just getting black called. So when we found that, what we did was immediately like we tested out by deleting that node, which immediately solved the issue. Like we can see the traffic is going out. And later what we found was like, the reason why this was took this long was like, Selim was like adding these nodes with each scale up. So whenever like we are promoting something to staging, there's a node scale up, right? So that IP range keep getting used. So they were reusing some, but not reusing some things. So it took a long time to get to that critical point where like it overlapped with the firewall subnet.
It's intriguing that this issue only surfaced after months of running Cilium. What factors contributed to the problem remaining dormant for so long?
Yeah, so exactly that. So the issue was again, like, because we are promoting releases every day, when we promote only, it get, like sometimes it triggers a node scaler, right? So when the new nodes come, Cilium like take a new CIDR block from the, like our IP range and give it to a new node. So in that particular case, it took a long time to work through that gigantic IP block that was given to Cilium by default. So after about 8 months only, that went to the critical point where I get overlapped with the firewall itself.
Once you identified the root cause, how did you resolve the issue in both staging and production environments?
Yeah, so after we found out the actual root cause, it was the fix was pretty straightforward, but there were a number of complications within applying this fix. So the first complication was like the what we needed to change actually like single helm value within the Cilium config, which is like cluster pool, IP, port CIDR range, something. I can't remember the exact name. So, but in the Cilium docs, like where this says you can change this. There are like big warning. They are saying do not change this. It will result in network disruptions. So, but since we didn't have any choice, we just went ahead and test this on development. There we change this and apply to see what happened. Like as soon as we change, we ran like a lot of checks. Like we ran a daemon set on each node and two daemons is basically like client and a server that talk to each other. So we know like every node can talk to every other node. So once that test was confirmed, we trigger a node scaler. So the new node will come with the new CIDR range. And within that, still we didn't notice any issues. So since that works, so our SR team wrote up a quick script to like drain down the like existing node pool. So all the pods will get pushed to a new node, which new nodes will always have the like these safe IP ranges. So while that is running, we monitor the whole process and we didn't see any packet drops. So we present this finding to our product council saying like this is a risk, but this is something we have to do. Otherwise, in production, we found when this is happening in production, in like maybe 8 node scale ups, the same issue would have happened. So we quickly talked with the product council and said we have to do this, and they accept the risk, and we retested this on staging and applied the production. So. But both of the scenarios, we didn't notice any, even a single packet drop, like went smoothly. So, and after that is done, we ran some bunch of node tests and all the nodes are coming in the new range and our range was completely gone. And so when we are picking this range, like we did the extensive analysis on like all of our cloud resources, like to make sure like we won't ever run this to again. And we make sure like everyone in our SRE team and everyone in the like basically dev team knows this CIDR range is off limit for any other resource creation.
Challenging experiences often come with valuable lessons. What were the main takeaways for you and your team from this incident?
So like main takeaway in this is like when something like this happened, like we were really lucky enough this happened on staging. So we weren't that stressed, but we were kind of stressed because we don't know why this is happening. So all of us, like, basically went into like methodical debugging step. Like we went from one step to one step. So we cover everything. So otherwise, I don't think it's very easy to find the root cause of this event quickly. So, and we also like a lot of us hasn't worked that low level on the networking before, like these kind of things, like tracking packets and finding like exactly where the routing happening, especially when we are talking about like very different network components. So it has been a like really good learning experience for all of us. And so after this process, we all know now, so the main takeaway we had was like, this was a really good learning experience for us. So whenever like something like even close related incident come, like our whole team is now well equipped to handle something like this.
Given the complexity of the issue, are there any tools or practices that could have helped prevent or detect it earlier?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So I don't think there's a straight answer for this particular one, because like in a large organization like ours, it's incredibly hard to track every dependency and every resource that are like deployed within our networks. So, and none of our engineers or like SRE team has encountered something like this particular before. So I think the main tool or like tool we can have is experience. So like as I mentioned, like now we are well equipped to handle something like this. Our SRE team will know like from a mile away then something like this is happening. Like this could be a routing issue. So we just straight up like without a lot of investigative things, we can just go and see the routing table. We were having similar issue, not quite similar, like there was another similar issue in one of our another clusters like last week. So even like one of our engineers were working on this, like directly went to the routing table and checked what's going on. So in that case, the issue was like the node level, like the pods running in host network mode isn't able to talk to core DNS running in the cluster. So that also turned out to be a like missing routing rule. So he was able to like, as soon as they see, saw the issue, like just went to the node and checked routing table. And it was right there. So ultimately, like, there's no single magic bullet. It just comes down to experience.
You know, stressful situations obviously aren't things that are just limited to work when, you know, when you face a problem with Cilium and it decides to stop. But there are also lots of stressful situations that can happen in life. What are your strategies for managing pressure?
Talking about, like, again, professionally, I'm very extremely lucky to be in a team where like we treat failures as learning opportunities rather than like reason to point fingers at each other. So with that mindset, we have a huge incentive to test out things and like learn new things and find different ways that can things break down. With that in mind, like dealing with something like this is not very stressful in our team because like it's a matter of finding the root cause and fixing it, not so much about like being, will I have a job tomorrow or something like that. So like having a good team really helps out here. And beyond that, I make it a habit to talk with my lead every often and sync up so I don't have any potential blockers that he not know. So in that case, like when it comes to a like massive deadline, so he is always up to date and we can be flexible about deadlines as well. So because he's always know what's going on. And another way I would personally deal with stress is, like, even though this sounds a bit cliche, I find like weightlifting helps a lot because it kind of helped me de-stress when I'm working on like huge video or like near a deadline.
What do you say that you do when you have something like a big deadline? I couldn't understand you.
But even though it sounds cliche, I do a lot of weightlifting when I'm okay. Near a deadline because like that kind of gives me a mental clarity. Yeah, it's a weird zen feeling I can't explain, but after like heavy day at the gym, I will always have fresh mindset tomorrow, day after.
Okay. Now, speaking of frustrating situations, your talk was accepted at KubeCon North America in Salt Lake City 2024, but you could not attend for reasons that were outside of your control. Has this stopped you from applying to the next conference or KubeCon, or when are you going to be speaking next?
Yeah. So, yeah, that was quite a sad story. So, I was originally supposed to speak at I think it's called eBPF Day at KubeCon NA. But unfortunately, for an unavoidable certain reason, my visa got declined. And I was actually quite eager to meet a lot of people who are building like tools I use day to day. But things were out of control. And so currently, one of my talks again is waitlisted on KubeCon EU, but I don't know like if you have a like very good chance on that. But my BU head, Kanchana, was like very supportive and like very encouraging to submit to more conferences and apply more CFPs. So you see, I'm hopefully trying to apply for next NA1 as well. So if I get selected, I would definitely attend.
Fantastic. Do you have anything else planned? What's next for you? Whether it's weightlifting, writing articles, video games, what do you got going on next?
Yeah, so like these days I'm mostly researching, like in my off time, I'm mostly researching about like how we can use AI ops and EB web to build better tools to make lives of SREs easier. So I found like the current LLM based agents are like really powerful and can do a lot of things to help our day-to-day life easier. And beside from that, like in my day-to-day like office work, I'm mostly working on like it promises to build like our next generation of features for observability platform with Prometheus. So I have a few articles in mind as well, but I couldn't quite get around to building that. And I was working on like another project called Proxyless eBPF using Proxyless scale to zero using eBPF. And today also like one of the community members was asking like, hi, is there any update? Because like, last month or so, like I said, I will give you an update on 2 weeks. But because of the other things, I couldn't quite get around to that. So I'm hoping to quickly build a solution around for that using maybe Kada or Cilium. And yeah, that's mostly, yeah.
Okay. And how can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, so if you go to my personal website, it's isala.me. You will find all the ways to connect with me. If you are in Twitter, like the best way to connect with me is like just shoot me a DM at isalapon.4. So I'm happy to connect with anyone who is willing to learn, or like I'm always on a mood to share my knowledge.
Very good. As you've done so with us today, Isala, thank you so much for joining us on CubeFM. You did a wonderful job responding to our questions. Wish you nothing but the best and hope to see you giving a talk at KubeCon very soon. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.